So, from today we start discussing algorithms for unconstrained optimization, in particular for unconstrained minimization. In the last set of lectures we have seen optimality conditions, which will be the basic tool for algorithms. So we have our reference problem, it's always the same. We want to minimize a function f from Rn to R on the whole space Rn. Okay? And we will assume from now onwards, so I will not state it repeatedly, I state it now and then we give it for granted, that f is at least continuously differentiable and when we will be using second order derivatives, Hessian matrices, we will implicitly assume that it is also twice continuously differentiable. Okay? So, from now onwards, it is continuously differentiable and twice continuously differentiable when we use second order derivatives, which will be in a few weeks' time. We will focus on a specific class of algorithms which have the following property. So they are iterative methods, first of all. It means that the algorithms will generate a sequence of points starting from some x0, we generate x1, from x1 we will generate it x2, and so on. Okay, so. And other property we are looking for is to build the same algorithms say the same methods, which are iterative methods with the following property that f at x0 is greater than f at x1, which is greater than f at x2, and so on. Generally, f at xk is greater than f at xk plus 1. Okay? Since we aim at minimizing f, it looks that this is a promising way to compute minima. Okay? Each point is better than the previous one with respect to the objective function. Okay? Actually, there are also methods which I'm not sure we will be seeing, which ask for a weaker kind of descent, which is, let's say, non-monotone. Descent, which states the following. We don't want the next iterate to be better, necessarily better than the previous one, but we are happy even if we improve this value, not at the next iteration, but after some iterations. Okay, formally we can state like this way, we can say that whenever we fix any k, there exists an m such that f at xk plus m is better than f at xk. Better means less. Okay? So, non-monotone descent methods are those methods in which you don't necessarily require this, but you are happy even after some iterations you get a better point. Okay? Notice that this m is not necessarily the same at each iteration. Okay? It depends on the iteration you are considering. Okay? For k equal 1, it could be the next one. For k equal 2, maybe 5 iterations later. For k equal 3, might be 2 iterations later, and so on. Okay? Anyhow, our main focus will be on actual descent methods, those which have this property. And actually, we will see that methods don't necessarily find a local minimum point, but the goal of the algorithms is to find a stationary point. So, what we are actually looking is a point x bar such that the gradient of f at x bar is zero. If you remember the lectures on optimality condition, if f is convex, this means that x bar is a minimum point. But if it is not convex, this does not necessarily mean that it is a local minimum point. But algorithms manage to find stationary points. Are efficient algorithms, but are able to find stationary points. And convergence to a stationary point can be achieved at different extents. You may have different level or different kinds of convergence. Clearly, what you would like to have is finite convergence. It means that after some iterations, you, let's say that at iteration k bar, you manage to find a point x k bar at which the gradient is zero. Okay? So, we would like to have this, which is the strongest kind of convergence. Almost forget about getting these results, because I'll show you just one algorithm which has finite convergence, likely at the end of today's lecture. And actually it is a rather theoretical algorithm, because it's not easy to implement it, because it requires the computation of all the eigenvalues of a matrix, and works only for a particularly class of functions, which are the strictly convex quadratic functions. So forget about this. Okay, we will not get this. Generally, these algorithms, if you don't stop them, generate an infinite sequence of xk. And the kinds of convergence we can get, let's say they are asymptotic kinds of convergence. And I'm we might get three kinds. The first is, it says that the sequence xk converges to some x bar. Such that x bar is a stationary point for f. Okay? Okay. So the whole sequence converges and the limit point is a stationary point. Okay? This is also hard to get as kind of convergence. Actually, today I will show a first algorithm which says a weaker form of one. It says if the sequence converges, then the limit point is a stationary one. The most common kind of convergence we get is a bit weaker and says that each cluster point of the sequence xk is a stationary point of f. This is the result we will get in most cases. We don't know if the sequence converges, but any cluster point of the sequence is a stationary point. And the weakest kind of convergence that we will get at least one is that at least one cluster point of the sequence xk is a stationary point for f. We will see a couple of situations in which we cannot prove that each cluster point is stationary, but that at least one is. Clearly, this kind of convergence implies this, which in turn implies this other. Okay? If the sequence converges, there exists a unique cluster point, and if it is stationary, then you got also this one. And then, second relationship, if each cluster point is a stationary point, then at least one cluster point is a stationary point. The two implications are pretty obvious. Okay? And the way we will get the middle type of convergence, so that each cluster point of the sequence is stationary, is the following. We will generally prove that the limit of the norm of the gradients at xk is zero. And during the lecture I explain it to you. How does this condition imply that each cluster point is stationary? Well, just take a cluster point, it is the limit of a subsequence. Okay? We know that if the limit of this sequence is zero, also the limit of the gradient computed at the points of the subsequence goes to zero in norm. Okay? At the same time, since the gradient is a continuous function and the norm is a continuous function, this goes to the norm of the cluster point, of the gradient of the cluster point. Okay? So the limit is unique, so this two means that the gradient at the cluster point has norm is zero, and the unique vector whose norm is zero is the zero vector. Okay? So whenever we prove that the sequence of the norm of the gradients goes to zero, we get this type of convergence. Is it clear? A last general remark on iterative methods. Clearly, whenever you have an iterative method, the next point, let's say xk plus 1, is some xk, the previous iteration, plus, clearly, the difference of the two points. This is trivial, okay? It's a stupid equality. But we write it this way. We can write it this way. Some step size times some directions. Okay? So, an iterative method can always be written in this way. Current iteration plus a move along a direction dk of length tk. Okay? So you can get to the new point moving along this from the new point. Sorry. You get the new point moving from the current point along direction dk with step size tk. Okay? So, this will be called step size, and this is direction. Okay? So, all methods can be described in this way. I have a remark. When we speak of direction, up to now we always consider unitary vectors, vectors whose norm is one. Okay. Here we don't necessarily need this, because if we choose a vector or some positive multiple of the vector, we identify the same direction. Okay? We don't need to ask the norm of the direction to be one, because if it is not one, we can change the step size accordingly. Okay? Since here we have a step size, if this is not if this is unitary, you have some step size. If this is not unitary vector, then you can modify the step size accordingly in such a way that you get the same point as you get with a unitary direction. I mean, I think this is more clear. You know, I write it wrong. These two things are the same. Okay? This is a unitary vector. This is not necessarily a unitary vector. You get the same thing just changing the step size. Okay? Multiplying the step size by the norm of the direction. So, generally, I will not ask for this. Okay? And an iterative method is completely described whenever we know how the direction and the step size are chosen. Okay? So, a description of the an algorithm will be just telling how you choose the direction and how you choose the steps, the corresponding step size. Okay? So in the next lecture we will focus on choices for the directions and choices for the step size. Okay? This describes all possible iterative methods. I also told you that our goal, is to build the same methods, so methods which have this property. So we say that some DNLN is the descent direction for f at some point x if f at x plus t times d is less than f at x whenever the step size t is positive, of course, and small enough. So a descent direction is a direction along which I can move from the point of a small enough step in such a way that I get a better value for the objective function f. Okay? Clearly, if you have this and you build the methods in which directions decay are the same directions, clearly, if you choose the right step size, you have this property. Okay? I'm just giving definitions. But now the point is how I can find the same direction. Okay? Because, let's say I'm talking and talking, but I'm not going to the points. Okay? Because I want algorithms which do this. Algorithms are done this way. If I want this, I should ask for this. Okay? But I'm always saying the same thing. What comes to help us now are Taylor's formulas or directional derivatives. Because if you remember the very first lectures, we proved that the directional derivative, which is the limit of this incremental ratio, is the differential of f, which is nothing else than the scalar product of the gradient of f
attacks with direction B.
Okay, we proved this in one of the very first lectures in early October. Okay, and you can check it once again with Taylor's formula, because if you use Taylor's formula, this incremental ratio is the gradient times D plus some residual, and we know that this goes to zero as D goes to zero. Okay? So you can tell it in terms of directional derivative, or you can tell it in terms of Taylor's formula. This gives us the tool we want. This is Taylor's formula when you divide both members by D. So, why am I saying that now I have the right tool? Okay. Suppose that this scalar product is negative. Okay. Well, these is a sufficient condition for D to be at the same direction. Why? If this limit is negative, whenever D is small enough, this incremental ratio must be negative. Okay? Because its limit is negative. And if you take a positive D, this is positive, so the numerator must be negative. Okay, so if you have this condition, then this is true. Okay, this is the definition of the limit. So sometimes you could find also this condition as the definition of the same direction. Okay. They are not equivalent. Okay. This is a sufficient condition. But this is the tool you can use. Okay. Because you have the gradient, you compute at the point, you take a direction which has negative scalar product with the gradient, and you are done. I remember you that negative scalar product means that the angle which the two vectors form in the plane, which the two-dimensional subspace which contains both, is greater or equal than 1/2 p, or 9. It is greater or equal than 1/2 p, or if you like it best, is greater or equal than 90 degrees. Okay? Well, so, to build a descent method, when we are given some point x, first thing would be to choose a direction with this property. And which direction would provide the best choice? Well, since this quantity is going to this value, the smaller this value is, the more negative it is,
the bigger, at least asymptotically, the bigger decrease you get. Okay, so one idea would be to take the direction D, which given X provides the smallest value for this. Okay, so somehow you would like to choose the direction D which solves this minimization problem. Okay, the smaller this scalar product is, the best asymptotic decrease I get. Okay, this doesn't work. Why? Well, suppose that the scalar product is negative for some d. Okay? Then, rather than d takes t times d, and take the scalar product. This is t times the previous scalar product. This is negative. Okay? If you take t, which goes to, sorry, plus infinity, this scalar product goes to minus infinity. Okay? So, this problem is unbounded by below. Okay? Because if the objective function is negative at some point, then you go to minus infinity. Take a different view for this. This is a linear function. X is fixed, so this is a vector of coefficient. Your variables are the components of D. So this is a linear function in D. Okay. Linear functions are unbounded on the whole space. When you do linear programming, you do on polyhedra. Okay. Which may be bounded or unbounded. But you are sure that you have an optimal value if the polyhedron is bounded, okay? If it is a polytope. So this is not strange, okay? So if we want to keep this idea, get the maximum possible decrease, we should somehow replace this lack of constraint, the fact that we take all direction, considering, for instance, at least for once, all vectors whose norm is 1. Okay? So, in this way, the feasible region is bounded, is compact, is closed and bounded, and we know by Weierstrass theorem that a minimum value exists. Okay? So the question is, for which direction D you get the minimum value? Okay. First, we have to make an obvious assumption. We have to suppose that this gradient at x is not zero. Okay? Otherwise we have already won the competition because we have found the stationary point. Okay, so I formalized this into a proposition, so let's suppose that
at the given point x, the gradient is non-zero. Then we can prove two things. The first thing we can prove that minus the gradient of f at x is a descent direction. For our function f at the given point. And second, we can prove that the optimal solution of the problem we are of the problem minimizing the scalar product of the gradient with direction with unitary directions is minus the gradient, well, since we are taking norm 1, divided by its norm. Okay? So, this is telling you that minus the gradient gives you the direction of asymptotic maximum decrease at the point. Okay. I guess you have already heard sometimes the gradient is the direction of maximum increase. Okay? Change the sign, and rather than increase, you get decrease. Okay? So this is formalizing that statement. The opposite of the gradient is the direction of asymptotic maximum decrease. Well, the proof of the first part is trivial. Why? We know that this is a sufficient condition for D to be a descent direction. So, let's see what happens when we take D to be minus the gradient. Well, the scalar product of the gradient with minus the gradient is what? Okay, minus can go outside. So, this is minus the scalar product of a vector with itself. What is it? Scalar product of a vector with itself. What is this? Yeah, it's the square of the norm. Okay, so this is minus the square of the norm of the gradient of f at x. Since this vector is non-zero, this is positive, you have minus in front of it, so this is negative. First part is proved. Second part is easy too, but requires some further details from linear algebra. The scalar product of two vectors is the product of the norm of the two vectors times the cosine of the angle between the two vectors. So in our case, this is the gradient This is the direction D. This is
angle theta. Okay.
We have this from a linear algebra. Or if you like,
best by definition of angle. Okay? One of the many possible definitions of angles. Or of the cosine of the angle. Well, let's consider our case.
We took D to have norm 1. So this doesn't mind.
Okay?
So minimizing this scalar product over all directions D which are unitary, well, the objective function can be rewritten this way. This is a constant value, so it gets out, and you are minimizing the cosine of theta where? Okay, whenever you move your direction, D, which angles can you get? Okay, well, this is just unitary, but you can take it, you can take the D you like best. Okay, so the angle is any angle. And angles are between, let's say, consider between 0 and 2 times p. Okay? Since you take any direction d, the angle can be any, so angles are between 0 and 2 times p. Well, now this problem is pretty easy. Why? First of all, you have just one single variable, which is good. Second thing, which values does this cosine take? The values. The cosine is always between minus 1 and 1. Okay? So, the minimum value this function can take is minus 1. Okay? So, the optimal solution is given by theta, which gives you minus 1 for the corresponding value of the cosine. And which angle gives you minus 1? P. Okay, so we have solved this problem. Okay? Let's go back to our framework. We know that theta is the angle between the gradient and the direction d. Okay? Now, the optimal angle is theta. Means that the direction d is collinear with the gradient, but has the opposite sign. Okay? So, D is minus the gradient times some scalar value in such a way that D is unitary. So, it's the norm of the vector. Okay? Oh, I'm going very, very slow. So we proved this. We proved exactly this. Okay? Best direction to get the maximum asymptotic decrease is minus the gradient.
Okay, I think we can stop 5 minutes
and then we will use this.
We will use this direction, okay, to build our first method.